The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Hello and a pleasant good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is the 1st of November, the first day of the trek to Christmas. No? Well, we started playing Christmas music at my house and now the wife wants me to paint. So I am in that Christmas
season and start.
Christmas season and start. This is C.A. Nuri and I shall be your host for today. And of course, Aaron Green is joining me as we have Man Down Mashup Wednesday when we join both shows together, mashed them together, have one show that was on the clock with Aaron Green that we had on the first hour. And of course, now is Guardian Radio in the AM. Today, we will be discussing the great news that we're going to be addressing the shanty town. I want to analyze that because one or two things just doesn't sit well with me. But before we start that, on the other show, the other side, I was asking Erin what issue she has against my MP, my Fox Hill MP, for being chairman and the Minister of Foreign Affairs and the MP. He explained recently in the House of Assembly, and I played the clip yesterday, why it makes good sense. It makes good sense. It makes good political sense that the party machinery is in aligned with the executive or the governance branch of the Bahamas. And he put that position down, and Aaron still has an issue with it. And I said, okay, I'm going to allow you space. I'm going to allow you time to explain that to me. So see if you convince me. So go ahead. You get your 30 seconds.
First of all, I'm not vexed.
You're not vexed or at it?
No.
I'm sound happy though.
I'm a bit more disappointed.
Who are you disappointed in?
Mr. Mitchell. But I can tell you why.
The Prime Minister wants him to be chairman. How can you be disappointed in him if the Prime Minister wants him? I heard when he said it.
That's a part of the disappointment, you know. Not that the Prime Minister wants him, but that the Prime Minister also understands the value that Mr. Mitchell can bring to both politics and governance. What concerns me most is what appears to be an inability to balance the roles that he has voluntarily assumed. Not just an MP and a cabinet minister, that we've seen many MPs, many politicians have difficulty balancing the role of MP and cabinet minister. But he's taken on chairman, MP, and cabinet minister. And here's why I'm disappointed. That presented an opportunity for Mr. Mitchell to maybe not shift political culture, but to expand it and to bring into political space mechanisms that benefit both political parties and the Bahamian people, and let me throw in the third, and governance generally, right? First of all, we don't have real substantive mechanisms to manage conflict of interest. See, for instance, Mr. Mitchell serves as the chair of the party and the Minister of Foreign Affairs. As MP for Fox Hill, Mr. Mitchell on occasion likes to throw out this issue of banking deserts, right? The shrinking banking landscape and underserved Bahamians, right? By banks, commercial banks. Mr. Mitchell has never addressed this as chairman of the party. He's never addressed it as Minister of Foreign Affairs publicly, but only as an MP. He contradicts what he appears to contradict his own party's agenda and his own administration's agenda, but in the meantime has not picked up, or I have not heard him publicly promote any solutions that are being derived by the administration or mechanisms in government like central bank and sand dollar. And it makes me question, what exactly is the protest about? Are you using this issue to gain more credit or power within the party space? Are you using this issue to present an image to the people that you do not present to the members of your party or to the members of your cabinet? Right? And so I am more disappointed in Mr. Mitchell's inability to balance appropriately these tasks that he's taken on and the obligations that come with it. Furthermore, he could be using that time to reinforce the party by ensuring that young people understand the most important political and parliamentary principles that exist.
I hear all that. I'm just hoping that Lyons is able to pay her $1,500 and Gibson is able to pay her $1,500. And I'm sure the party will appreciate their donation to the party and moving forward.
On another note, at the MP level, they did a wonderful thing. He did a wonderful thing by ensuring that Bernard Road could be paved and improved, right? But that's as soon as he did that, he dropped the ball because now Bernard Road has turned into a speedway. And we know this because we've already had a number of incidents where children on the way to and from school have been hit by cars, right? In fact, we have a number of power issues in the area because people like cutting down the lamp pole and replacing it before BPL have a replacement, right? And Mr. Mitchell could have, at the constituency level, focused on better and safer driving culture, considering Fox Hill is a walking community. That's just, you know, one of the things.
Let's pivot.
Yeah, man, no problem.
Recently, the minister who's in charge of demolition of the shanty towns announced that they'll be targeting New Providence first, right? They lay out that they have a number of houses that they have selected, indicated that they will be bulldozed in the immediate future. This is my first concern. My first concern is that this particular minister announced that social services is prepared to assimilate, to assist, to house. This is where I got out of it. To assist, to assimilate, and house these persons living in the shanty towns.
Now, let me give you a quote.
Go ahead and give the quote, because I am concerned now.
From the article, 162 notices posted in two New Providence shanty towns.
I want you to pause there. Is that saying 162 notices means that's 162 households? Do you would assume that?
No, we can't assume that.
So what do you assume by 162 notices?
That...
There you go.
I assume that 162 structures have had notices posted on it.
So you believe those structures people are not living in?
No, I think people living in them.
So 162 households.
No, I was about to say it could be more because, I mean, in a household, we really think of a family structure.
Yeah.
But it could be multiple families living in one home.
But let's go, the basic of 162 households have gotten letters. Go ahead.
And so the quote is, well, from the article, so I'm reading from that article. Sweeting said the Ministry of Social Services will provide temporary housing for impacted Bahamians.
There's a lady who living in Fox Hill who is looking for a temporary house for the past 9 months. She's on a wait list. She's on a wait list, Aaron. So when I hear this minister, who's not a part of social services, saying that, don't worry, social services has a plan to help them. When I know the minister of social services said that, man, they are lacking housing, right? I know beforehand that they already know they are lacking housing. So someone is being disingenuous.
Hold on. And we can reasonably presume that a large number of these people in the shanty town are there because, not because they can't afford reasonable housing, they can't access it. It's unavailable.
None there.
Ma'am.
So why should we even allow Minister Sweeting to get away with this ludicrous statement? I mean, I can watch it. I can watch it now. I'm going to let him everything play out.
See, but here's what the problem is. The problem is that one of these ministries or multiple ministries have to respond. And they have to find housing
for 160 households.
That these people can access, right? That they have an obligation. And if the people are here legally, and we assume they're here legally because they haven't been detained and deported, and in various articles, right, that I'm referencing that, then they must be here legally, or they must have some degree of status, whether that status is being processed, right? The applications are being processed, but they haven't been detained and deported. Mm-hmm. So there is an obligation to ensure that housing is identified. The government doesn't necessarily have to pay for it for people who can who are working and can't afford, to pay for it. And see, that's a, so that's another matter, right?
We have addressed before in a number of our earlier programs, Aaron, that we have a housing crisis. The government responded that the, these people, we're going to have housing ownership and not addressing the housing crisis, which means affordable rental units for these people.
Mm-hmm.
We have a shortage of rental units for Bahamians to be able to afford here in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
In response, the minister responsible for housing has billing houses and said that we will make it more easy for you to qualify. But I have no money for buying any house.
Right, that's a separate issue.
That's a separate
issue. And it's an issue that we're going to touch on. I mean, I want to touch on just briefly because there's an article in Monday's paper or last week's paper, I think from Central Bank, indicating that a third, that only one third of mortgage applications are being approved in a particular quarter, recent quarter assessment. And so we have a problem where people have a reasonable amount of money but still can't qualify for a home. So the government is then saying, well, we have the Bahamas Mortgage Corporation where we change the terms to qualify, not the actual cost of the home. And then we have people, like you say, who can never afford. They should never be pushed to home ownership. They can't afford it. They don't have the wherewithal to maintain a home and a piece of property and all of the sort of statutory obligations that come with it, all of the infrastructural needs that arise. These people should be living in housing facilities that organize themselves, the maintenance of the space, and people just pay a fee, contribute a fee towards maintenance and upkeep. That's the strategy that we should have been dealing with a long time ago. But again, it appears as if the merchant imagination has consumed us. Everybody should buy a house. Everybody should have a house. Now, that was a great idea that the previous governments had, that you can create or engender a sense of national pride through ownership, right? I own a piece of property. I own a house. But we also have to find other ways to engender patriotism and national pride because not everybody could own a house. And it has had a detrimental effect on us socially and psychologically because we live in a town where apparently you cannot be an adult man or an adult woman if you living in the same house with your parents, even if you contributing to the rent, even if you paying the mortgage or part of the mortgage or buying the groceries or paying the electricity bill, you cannot be an adult in the same home with your parents, even though more and more homes, people cannot afford to maintain their mortgage on their own. It is a conundrum, a crisis.
My mommy always saying two women can't be in one house. One woman got to leave. But I want to address, interrogate the idea or the concern that why didn't we start with the farm in Abaco? For months, years, going on at least last six years, there has been great debate that Abaco is in crisis in terms of housing is one, in terms of immigrants, in terms of shanty towns. We know for the past two and a half years, we had an issue about the injunction regarding the shanty towns there.
Mm-hmm.
One would have assumed that the first shanty town to be addressed in the Bahamas, that the ministry would have concentrate on that. We know that the Chief Justice just ruled that two houses out of the hundreds of houses they are built illegally, that two houses in Abaco is primed or is going to be allowed to be bulldozed there. He said immediately. Since the ruling of the Chief Justice, those houses, I mean, it's been about 3, 4, 5 months now, those houses was allowed to remain. And since then, about 20 more houses have been constructed. I am concerned and wondering if Minister Sweeting is paying attention to what is happening, or is this intentional?
Well, listen.
That this whole announcement that they'll be bulldozing shanty towns in New Providence is all for Grand Bahama by-election talk. that nothing happening.
I mean, that make great sense. Let me read briefly from this article. PLP will deal with marital rape. At the very end, it says, while Davis said the PLP would commit to addressing the issue if elected to power, he could not promise it would be a priority, as the primary focus would be on the economy. Quote, our primary focus would have to be on the economy because that's priority number one. So for me to say prioritize marital rape to commit right now, we committed we'll address it. I want to replace the word marital rape with the shantytown situation in Abaco, right? I have a feeling that they're prioritizing the economy. And we got a labor, we have an organized labor shortage. The organized labor that we have, they're already employed on other larger organized projects, right?
So what you're trying to say...
What I'm trying to say is that money has to make.
You're trying to say that they're ignoring Abaco because money has to make...
No, I'm going to say that they're not ignoring Abaco, that they have assessed Abaco and determined the need for labor is far greater than the need to deport people from Abaco. Unfortunately, we have this situation where they can't accommodate people in the existing housing. Bahamians don't want to live in the housing that exists now. The only labor that wants to live in the housing that exists now are migrants, are people who prioritize making the money over their living conditions.
My God, it's a crisis. Let's go to the phone line, say our producer. Patrick, first caller through. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me? Caller going once. Caller going twice. Let's go to the second caller there. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me? Caller going once. Caller going twice. Oh, yeah, I hear you now. Go ahead.
Hey, Zom.
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, Aaron, I beg your forbearance. I ask your forbearance. But I need to make two quick points, please. Two very important quick points. I noticed from Aaron's show, you all were speaking about the PLP will be discussing at our national convention marital rape and the marijuana bill and one or two other hot button issues, right? Mm-hmm. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
Right. Now, I have a serious concern with that.
But we're talking about immigration now. You could talk about anything but immigration you want, but that's immigration.
I understand.
Just make sure at immigration, because I don't like cutting, and you're a good big man.
So. Well, you all just made a reference point to it just now, a couple of seconds
and
ago.
And now people. We are talking about immigration.
Okay. As it relates to any hot topic.
Only immigration.
As it relates to any hot topic, inclusive of immigration.
Okay.
In the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of my major concerns would be, Aaron Cecil in the nation, is these matters, and Cecil, you spoke about it during your show, as it relates to what the agenda was that the government got, right? The government gets its agenda. The government gets its agenda from the Bahamian people at large, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a party thing, contrary to what was suggested, whether it's immigration or any other topic. It's not a party matter, as it was suggested by you or by both of you in the previous discussion. Those are matters that, first and foremost, ought to be dealt with at the national level and not confused at the party level.
Do you approve of the government bulldozing these these shanty towns?
That's the second point that I want to speak to.
But do you approve?
I heard you just a couple of seconds ago mentioned what happened in Abaco, the ruling in Abaco, where you said the Chief Justice gave way for 2 houses to be bulldozed out of one of the
250
shanty towns on Abaco, right? However, What you're not speaking to, Cecil, which is even more important, is the only reason why the Chief Justice limited his ruling to the 2 homes was simply because those 2 homeowners acknowledged that they were aware of all of the government's signage and the government's position.
No. Let's correct that, because the other notices were not posted according to statute. That's why. Not because those two identified themselves, but because the other notices were not.
That's just give my chance, Aaron. I coming right around to what you're talking to right now, right? The Chief Justice stated, as it relates to the 2 homes, the only reason why he's permitting those 2 homes And it's in writing. It's
No. It's that, but let's say it properly. That's not what was said. What was said, not why he's permitting it. What he's saying is that the reason why only two homes are to be demolished is because the notice for the other homes was not given according to statute.
Aaron, as the person presiding over the court case, it was for him to permit or not to permit, right? And if there was a challenge, then you have to take it up at the appeals level or at the Privy Council's level. And so it was his prerogative. And as it relates to the other homes, he stated very clearly that should the government go back, reapproach, do it correctly, ensure that all of the homeowners are properly notified with advance notice and they are properly made aware of the government's intention based on its Construction or Building Act of Ministry of Works, the government would then be in a position to reapproach the courts and get the approval as it would have gotten in the instances of the two homeowners who acknowledged that they were aware and they were informed, okay? And so however, all of that would go for naught. All of that would go for naught even if the government was successful at reapproaching the courts, demonstrating that they followed all the protocols and procedures, informed all of the homeowners in writing, ensured that they received the notices, etc. If those shanty homes on Abaco or anywhere is destroyed, because we have a home crisis, a home shortage crisis in our country, it would lead to an even bigger problem. Because most of the persons presiding, and this is also in writing, based on the report produced by the minister at the time, Ken Dorsett, and another report was produced under the then Minister of Works, Deputy Prime Minister Desmond Bannister. It shows that more than 60% of the homeowners...
So let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Anton, let me ask you this before you go.
Yes,
so
please.
You approve or you disapprove of what they're going to be doing?
What are they going to be doing?
Bulldozing the 120 houses.
162.
I approve, provided that the government has a sound and balanced approach, similar to what Minister Clay Sweeting spoke about, where they not only consider what was done illegally, but they also consider how the persons will be accommodated beyond the homes being bulldozed, because that's just the emotional hype aspect of this program, okay? The reality-based aspect of this program is how will those persons be able to normalize their lives within the society, what government initiatives or programs or funding is afoot or at play in order to assist with that process, and will they be able to successfully conclude that at the end of the day?
Okay. So that's where we're going to be. We're going to have the media investigate whether there will be adequate housing for the 162 households, right, that their transition... As they bulldoze one, that family, those persons are able to find housing.
No, that they're already in housing.
They're already in housing.
Because they need to have somewhere to put the things that they take out of the structure before it gets bulldozed.
So it's not going to be a mass bulldoze. It has to be a one per house as they go through to make sure that everybody...
Or two or three homes at the same time.
Yes.
But and even if they had the housing, I don't know if they could coordinate the movement of that many people. See, a part of the problem is how much money is the government willing to spend to do what it knows it ought to do what it is obligated to do.
And if these people are unable to afford rental units, who should pay for that rental unit?
Mary? Right. Exactly. It depends on the status of the person. Because we assume that they all have status, but we can't assume that they all have the same type of status, right? I'm in the country legally.
Yes, we assume
I have a work
legal
permit, and I work in at the job that's listed on my work permit. Mm-hmm. I doing everything legit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm in this unregulated housing, or I'm in illegal housing, right? The two are separate. My employer has an obligation to ensure that I am in state-approved housing in terms of the code, right? It's not unregulated and it's not illegal. So there's a thing that's going to happen. The government has to identify the individual, identify the sponsor, the work permit, and the person employing them, and interrogate why that person has not ensured that their employee is in adequate housing. Now, in the last time we had this conversation, people tell me that's not the law, that's not the law, and the government say, oh, we're going to make it the law. I'm not certain they've made it the law yet. I still think it is the law. Mm-hmm. I think it's ridiculous that you're trying to convince me that you've been taking in migrants for decades and decades, and their employer has no obligation to ensure that they're in proper housing.
Let's go to the callers, Aaron. Producer Patrick, first caller through. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Aaron. Good morning once again.
Morning.
Listen, Aaron, you're on point here. At the end of the day, still, after all of that, the expenses is going to fall on the taxpayers of this country, as usual.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you know, for quite some time, we as concerned Bahamians have been asking our government, successive governments, to follow the protocols that is law in the country. From statistics, who's in this country, who shouldn't be in this country, what are their names, where their origins are from, so on and so forth. And today, we have persons in this country unaccounted for.
Mm-hmm.
We have persons in this country who we don't know their backgrounds, where they came from, what they were engaged into, from their home countries, so on and so forth. So it comes back down to all of this entire exercise is back on the taxpayers' backs, as usual.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, you know, it seems as if with all of this stuff, whereas the housing is concerned, you know, for those who are legally here with papers, have been approved by our policies, our statutes, and so on and so forth, we have no beef with them.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of persons in this country that are living in these shanty towns who do not have the legal right to be here, but yet we have to facilitate either by repatriation, that means flying them out back to their country of origin, back at the taxpayer's expense again, or if they are going to be detained, we have to feed, clothe, and house them for a certain period of time at the taxpayer's expense again. And lastly, even if we give them credence to remain here, we still got to find somewhere to house them and so on and so forth. So it's all at the taxpayer's expense. At the end of the day, in closing, mm-hmm. The person, whoever brought these persons here, should be held accountable to ensure that they get proper housing, that their welfare is looked after. And at the end of the day, when that contract by work permit or whatever has ended, it is their responsibility to ensure that they leave the country. And it can't get no plainer, no simpler than that. Okay? So at the end of the day, in closing, it's the taxpayer who has to bear all the brunt of this entire exercise as we move forward. Thanks for taking my call. I will continue to listen.
Pleasure. Abaco Boomin. Those mm-hmm. construction workers live in shanty towns.
Mm-hmm.
Who paying for what? We know where they're working. We know what has happened. I hear all y'all talk about the business owners need to pay for housing, but that ain't happening.
But why is it not happening? It's not happening because nobody's enforcing the law.
There you go.
Just enforce the law.
Let's go to the next caller, Aaron. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Hey, CA, what's going on? Morning to you and your guest, man.
Morning.
Listen, government playing around with this issue, man. I don't think this government or I don't think government's serious about this thing at all. I just think they can procrastinate and just drag it on and drag it on to make it seem as if they are fair or they're doing something. Because if they were serious, right, why not just go from the root source? These people, they are work permits. Go to immigration and see who work permits were issued to. Go to the people who apply for these work permits. Start from the top and work your way down. You know what I mean? You going into shanty homes and trying to knock down these homes, you ain't defeating no purpose because these people are still here. These people have, I'm quite sure that half these work permits have already been expired or are not current. So why don't they just go straight to immigration? Who applied for work permit? Man, who have work permit? Who applied for these people work permit? And then start finding these people for not securing these people that they bought in. Let's stop playing with this issue, man.
Thank you very much.
Because all we're going to offer now is just that they can move from one area to the next area to the next area or to the next island to the next island.
That's what I plan to do. If it was me and you bulldoze my house, I go to Abaco because I know they ain't bulldozing nothing there.
Look, it's number one.
And it's work.
These people, whether they come here illegally, they're living illegally. They acquire these land illegally. They build illegal structures. You know, do Bahamians get that kind of benefit? So why are we extending this kind of benefit to these people?
The Bahamians with the right amount of money. See, let's do that. Some Bahamians doing it. They just understand how to wig the law.
Okay, let's look at the Bahamians in Abaco with the tents. Mm-hmm. Were they given this privilege?
You mean the people who were in the domes?
Oh. In the domes. Were they given that privilege? So let's stop playing around this issue, man.
Thank you very much.
I'll hang up. I'll continue to listen.
I appreciate it. Let's go to the next caller. You can comment, Aaron.
Yeah, man.
Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me? Caller Gern once. Caller Gern twice. Not there. Go ahead, Aaron. What's your commentary on that?
You know, my commentary is this, is that as always, I say, let's step away from demonizing people and let's look at systems and critique systems that are not working. We have a multitude of problems. We have a labor shortage and we have a housing shortage. Some people say that the labor shortage is exacerbated by the housing shortage. It's not that Bahamians don't want to work. It's that Bahamians refuse to be housed in substandard conditions and then be sort of relegated to a lower pay that they should not get, but they're being offered because the employer could find cheaper labor, right? We do have an organized labor crisis. You can tell me what you want. We got an organized labor crisis. We got a housing crisis, and we have a migrant crisis. But it appears that the migrant crisis sits in our inability to properly manage our immigration services, right? That's where that lies. It's all in the papers. Today we're talking about the shantytown issue, but we have the Prime Minister in last week's paper saying that he has to address this matter of how discretion is exercised, you know, within immigration. We talk about that. We talk about that months in advance, Mr. Newry, when the Keith Bell matter was in the air. That perhaps the problem is a lack of understanding of the actual scope of discretion, and over the decades, how that operation of discretion has evolved to a place that thwarts the actual function of the immigration service. Mm-hmm. But let us refrain from calling people illegal.
And I hear you, Aaron, and all that semantics. I won't argue with that point. Yeah. I understand that. And I said all that semantics with me. My point is, it seems by the issues that we're facing, that we have in a housing crisis, that we need to make sure social services are able to assist these people, that the solution of bulldozing the houses in general, we'll never reach that. We must conclude that it's never going to be solved.
Okay, so,
or that is not a major issue to be solved.
No, no.
Because so we have a labor crisis.
Right.
And because we have a housing crisis and all compiling.
I feel you. That's an important point. But we can't let the government get off like that. The government has an obligation to resolve this matter.
They're ignoring us. If you're hearing the minister sweet and saying, don't worry, we have social services can deal with it. And we know better. We Bahamians know that social services can't handle this.
What we have to say to them is that...
And we allowed him to get away with saying it.
Did we demand that you respond to the shantytown, the unregulated and illegal housing communities? We demand that you respond to them, and we demand that you respond to them appropriately by diverting the resources to where they need to go. Because you're not going to come to us and tell us we cannot process these people because we don't have no place to put them.
Are we able to ask social services their inventory of housing and homing? How much houses and homing they have available at this present time?
Of course we can ask.
We can ask them beforehand.
But forget that. I go straight to the Ministry of Tourism. They know how to put heads in beds. They know how to find beds, and they know how to put heads in them. Might as well let the Ministry of Tourism solve this problem because the relevant agencies are having a problem.
Let's go to the caller again. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
There's no such thing as cheap labor in the Bahamas when it comes to the Haitians. The basic standard rate for a laborer is $60 a day. The basic pay for a skilled mason is $120 per day. A helper makes a total of 700 A mason makes a total of $780 per week. A laborer makes a total of $360 per week. That's more than minimum wage. These people are working. They work 6 days a week. They have money. They can pay rent. Don't mind them talking, but they don't have no money or they don't have no place to live. They save their money up to send back home to bring their fellow comrades to the Bahamas.
I can interrogate that, sir. Let me interrogate.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
No, I agree. Hold on, don't go.
Give me the figure for a mason.
A mason makes $120 per day, a skilled mason, and they work 6 days a week. I'm telling you, I know better because I'm in the construction business.
Okay, now let me ask you a question. I'm a migrant. I'm documented or I'm undocumented, but I definitely is a migrant. I definitely here on a work permit, right?
Hold
on, listen, I'm just saying. I'm here though, and you've seen me work, so you know that I am the best mason you've had in your operation in months, right? Maybe years.
Mm.
But you know I'm a migrant.
Right.
Are you offering me the top rate for a migrant? Is that what a Bahamian mason is making, or is that what a migrant mason is making?
That's what a migrant mason makes. A Bahamian mason would probably work for $150.
Okay.
$150 a day, a skilled mason. See, but what is happening here is there's a lot of skullduggery going on with these migrants. A migrant will come into this country, you paying him $120 a day, mason. You know what the migrant then will say to you? I don't have paper. Why don't you sponsor me? I pay you $300 every month if you sponsor me and get me paper to be straight in the country. And a lot of Bahamians are caught up in this. They get these people straight, and then the people have to now pay them for getting them straight on a monthly basis. So there's a racket going on.
The Bahamian becomes a slave master.
The Bahamian becomes a slave master.
Thank you, especially for the clarification.
I love how his accent changed.
We wanted to. I appreciate the vibe. We wanted to emphasize.
You like how his accent changed?
I mean, I hear it.
You heard the accent?
Yeah.
That's different. I don't know. I can't do it. I don't have a Haitian accent at all in me. I try to imitate Jamaicans and Haitians. I just can't do it.
Yeah, I just sound bougie. Anything I do, yeah. I don't even try.
I don't even try. No, I can't.
In fact, I just have to declare my right to speak in Bahamian standard English.
Off East Street, a one-room building with a bathroom is $175 a week.
Mm-hmm.
How much is that per month? And I'm listening to what he's saying that they can afford it by how much the immigrants are making per day, whatever it is. Now imagine you have an immigrant with a house, a family of four or five,
mm-hmm.
living in a one-room apartment with a bathroom.
For $780
a month. For $780 a month. That's some hard living, man.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Very hard.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break here. Call, I see you. We can call, embrace you on the next side of the show. This is Garden Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Of course, Aaron Green is with me.
And then the techs are here with us as well, sir.
Yeah, we can read one or two of those techs also. But we'll be right back.
Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good for nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair. You say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police won't find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows it's you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick around the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Morning, Bishop. Henry Fernandez, Shirley Caesar, and Jonathan Nelson for the Becoming My Best Self Conference on November 2nd to the 4th at the Baja Mar Hotel. You do not want to miss these 3 days of anointed music, worship, and the Word. Get your tickets now. For one price, you can worship with Shirley Caesar and Jonathan Nelson and participate in every session for the entire weekend. Register now at henryfernandez.org or purchase your tickets at Suntime Marathon Mall, the Galleria entrance. Contact 242-601-2012 for more info. Seats are limited. It's time to level up at the Becoming Your Best Self Conference. Meet us there.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri. I see we have a caller online, so I'll go to that caller first, and we'll go to the text line, and then we'll continue to analyze whether the minister responsible for the shantytowns eradication, is he, I was going to say one word, anyway, is he playing with our emotions? Are they going to actually do what they say they're going to do? Or this issue that we're dealing with is beyond us because we, again, have a housing crisis, we have an employment crisis, and because we can't solve the immediate issues, we will ignore the problem right here.
And because, but then what happens when they move to the family islands? Right, because we're talking about New Providence.
They changed their last name and then try going on to Generation Land.
Yeah, I mean that too. But what I'm saying is,
Rose and Exuma have high cheekbones now.
Some of these people are working. They're not undocumented. They're documented and they're working. It's a matter of housing for them to be able to pay rent. They need to maintain their job. What happens when they move to the family islands?
Aaron, the people them on Spanish Wells can't even run them off of Russell Island. They own Russell Island.
I don't know how they get to Russell Island.
The people in Spanish will invite them to work on their boat. Anyway, let's go to the caller. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Good day, Nuri and Aaron.
Good day.
How y'all doing?
Good, good.
I just got off the phone with my friend in Abaco, who owns some of them shanty town on two pieces of property. One he owned, and the other property was owned by his mother who passed away.
Mm-hmm.
He told me since Monday that he wrote the government agencies been here in Nassau, and they've been giving him the runaround. Even immigration, he spoke with them. They told him to go back to Abaco and speak with the immigration officer in charge. So the immigration officer told him that he can't do nothing with them because they're here legally. He said, but they have no legal right to be on no properties. So, like I'm saying, I just hung up from him a couple of minutes ago. And the previous caller, what he's saying is correct, because I myself had one of those Haitian persons with papers some years ago. I had to cut it off, but that person is now living in the United States because he was picked up a few times. I had to get him a detention center, and he was sent back to Haiti. But this thing perpetuates a situation as if the government just stands around and wouldn't help Bahamians who have papers, who have the rights. But, you know, what they need to do is to just let them know that no matter where you are, you're going to be moved and bulldozing the houses. Illegal structures is illegal structures, and we need to just move on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Thank you very much, Cole.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, let's go read some of these texts that we had pending, actually. And I know we had some from the earlier program that we just want to put on the record so people can hear it, especially when they're spending money on text.
Yeah, man. So the first text, those rules for nominations or accompanying rules are not part of current PLP constitution. They are made up by current PLP leadership afraid of being challenged. But Mr. Nuri, in the break, you were telling me that you believe that these rules were actually ratified at the last convention.
Yes.
Even if they weren't ratified before the vote. They were ratified during the election to be in place for future elections. Another quick text. There's somebody saying I'd make a darn good MP. I'm miserable. You come to us. In fact, if I was an MP, I give away paint. Whatever color paint I give you is what the paint you get. Everybody could paint their house for Christmas. It'd be a surprise. It'll be a surprise. Another text, 40% in Nassau, of Nassau is shantytown. A lot need to be demolished. Some houses in shanty look better than over the hill. They are horrible. I want to say, when you're talking about shantytown, see, y'all only talk about Haitian and Bahamian residential areas, right? You're only talking about spaces that the typical dark-skinned people live in. I know about plenty shantytown in this place where a higher echelon of migrant lives.
In shantytown?
Yeah, man. Do you see me? I don't understand y'all. You only see Louis Bacon and Nygaard was fighting each other. Did the fight go on to the international court?
That was no
the shantytowns. Unregulated construction.
That was just unregulated. I know shantytown.
And all of the same things existed, eh? They allege that all of the same things they allege happened in these other shantytowns happened in them shantytowns.
Nonetheless, our government bulldozed that the other day. It's gone. It ain't there no more. Let's talk about the said it's still erected.
The repercussions, though. The repercussions. Okay. Somebody say, good morning, Tex. A great show as usual. If the government pay me $100 million, I will knock down every shanty town because I dead serious. But pay me in cash. I don't want to check. I read that text because a lot of people, their frustration is not with the Haitian migrant. Their frustration is not with the documented or undocumented migrant. Their frustration is what appears to, you know, what appears to be the unwillingness of the government to deal with the situation effectively.
And our willingness to put our heads in the sand and allow people to swing us, that they are pretending that they are actually doing something, but in fact they're not addressing issues.
And all the signs say that even if they were to start addressing them, they couldn't because they haven't put in place the mechanisms needed to realize the solution.
There hasn't been any mass construction of any apartment buildings for people to migrate or mitigate to at all.
Yeah.
So again, they're playing with us because the housing for social services is for emergency. Your house burned down, hurricane, temporary housing. Not for people who are living in shanty towns.
Right. And see, this is what I'm saying, because an employer must have some obligation. There's a temporary solution until a more permanent solution is found.
If that is so, our government would have forced the persons in Abaco who've done all those constructions, those millionaires and mega millionaires, to build a housing complex or jurisdiction for their workers. They're not asking them to, nor are these people willing to build it.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear that they said you're saying that these owners, these jobs should have housing for their employees, but they're not doing it, and our government is allowing it because they are not prepared to enforce the law. So now that we acknowledge that, what do we do now?
We petition private sector individuals to build temporary housing, and then we find
they ain't interested.
Well, then we just let the work stop. Let the boy them pull up on the job, you know, however, whatever.
You see tourism booming? Tourism booming. Our Minister of Tourism making announcements every other day.
I tell you what, we
need more buildings to be built.
I tell you what the state's response is going to be then. The state's response is going to be to allow the foreign direct investor to bring in their own workers, right? To bring in a team of foreigners that the foreign direct investor manages. They manage all the immigration paperwork. And we presume that when the foreign when that stage of the foreign investment is finished, that those workers will leave the country with their employers. That's what they're going to do. And Bahamians now will be at a disadvantage because it's not going to be, you can't hire migrants, you have to hire Bahamians. It's going to be, we've brought our laborers in, and we're not worried about the Labor Act because we can pay them what we want to pay them according to the heads of agreement, right? And the contractual relationship between the foreign direct investor and the Bahamian government. You, the Bahamian worker, will have no work. You will not be able to negotiate for a higher pay because you will be removed from the negotiations entirely.
One of my concerns is, after they bulldoze this land, what will they do with the property? Shouldn't that be in the narrative also, that we will be using this land for this, and that we have timeline to say, well, this land is going to be used for this?
If it is state-owned land. See, if it's privately owned land...
We shouldn't be bulldozing in the first place. Let the people who own it bulldoze it.
What if the people who've owned it have petitioned the state to say they cannot remove these people, or in another instance, they've bulldozed it once, they've bulldozed it twice. But because I'm not resident in Abaco, or before I could put a fence up, or even after I put the fence up, they tear the fence down. Or, sir, I don't know how they did it. They must have torn the fence down, built the structures, and then put the fence back up like it always, you know, like they put the fence up. The point is, if it belongs to a private owner, the government should not assume ownership because they demolished it. Because that owner could say, but you complicit in how they got on the land by not enforcing your regulations. If it's generational property, right, then it should be accessed. Occupancy should be given back to those within that family. And if it's crown land, then they should tell us, this is why the people can't be on the land, because it's protected, it's a part of a national park, it's being considered to be a national park, there are well fields, there's a health and safety reason why they can't be here, why nobody could be here. Or they say, we're taking this land to build a certified Category 5 resistant hurricane shelter.
Well, that ain't gonna happen no time soon.
I mean, I'm just throwing it out there.
What about squatters' rights and Bahamian nationals? I put the keyword is nationals, right? Bahamian citizens who've been living out in the open on these shanty towns for 12 years plus.
Mm-hmm.
Don't they have right to the land also?
I think it depends on whether a petition, like whether in that time somebody has actually petitioned for you to leave. Are you there? Have you been there 12 years with no disturbance? Nobody has identified themselves as the owner and said, I want you off the land. Or you've been there for 12 years and this bridge has been trying to get you off his land for 10 of those 12 years.
Hmm.
I think there's a difference. I think also what should be taken into consideration is one thing if you just living on the land. But what if you now pretending to be landlord and you collecting rent from people on the land, talking about you squatting and to own the land, but you collecting rent from people, whether documented or undocumented, should that prevent you from being able to claim title? We got some more text here too. Text, because... another says, how we now have cemeteries close to people's homes. He said... You know, we used to be scared of cemetery. Now some people, they look out their back window and there's a cemetery. We also have a problem with planning and all of those things, right? Another text here. Aaron, there's no shanty town in Grand Bahama, not one. I don't want to be cruel, but I want to ask, is that why we get the most stories about people living in cars
in Grand Bahama
and in their homes under tops? Like, is that because there are no shanty towns?
All the West End is a shanty town.
People are forced to live in whatever horrible conditions they find themselves in. Text said, Bahamians need to treat Haitians. Dear texter. I just pause for a moment. This texter thinks that we should treat Haitians how Israelis are doing Palestinians in Gaza. No tolerance. Dear texter. I mean, on behalf of Aaron Green, keep your sixth sense.
Let me try to squeeze this caller in, Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
Producer, patch that caller for me, please. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Yes. Nuri and Aaron.
Yes, sir.
I just called earlier and spoke about my friend in Abaco.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned something about squatters and squatters' rights.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get it clear. squatters' rights only have to do where somebody has enclosed property and been on it flying their flag for the period of time, undisturbed possession. I will tell you, I won a case in San Salvador on property that belonged to me and my cousin, Clayton Fernandez, those great-great-great-grandfather's property, okay? And four lawyers was in that case, and I won that case against them. The judgment was given on the 29th of January, 2015. It's in the Supreme Court Registry Library. You can get a copy of it and mm-hmm. see what he says about when someone claims to have squatters' rights. They must be flying their flag, in a sense, legal term.
Mm-hmm.
It must be enclosed because there were four different parties of cousins that failed, and I on that case. So squatter's rights don't mean to just be on people's property, because as long as you own that land and you are not restricted from entering the area of which they're claiming, they don't have squatter's rights.
I got you.
I like how you're giving them instructions now to what to do.
Well, no, because I'm saying if you could afford to put up a fence, then you have far more agency than you try to convince me, and you can't convince me you need
to
live here.
They work on construction site. They have access to fence. They have access to property.
Well, they have access to resources. They could have built their house anywhere else, right?
Okay.
We're not being cruel, though. We're not being cruel. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
One letter you write to them and tell them they are to move off your property is when you restrict them, that squatter's rights. See, if they don't have any fence up, if they say if they're occupying 1 acre,
mm-hmm.
it must have been fenced in for 12 years or more. Technically, get a copy of Chief Justice Sir Michael Barnett's ruling on the 29th.
Yes, sir, we have to go. We've hit the 12 o'clock mark. I apologize to cut you short, but the news is going to start playing in a moment. Mr. Newry, thank you for allowing me to mash up into your hour as you did into mine. I thought they were great conversations. We got to pick this up.
Yes.
It's not finished.
This has been Garden Radio on the AM with C.A. Newry. Thank you very much, Aaron Green.
And thank you to the caller. Last caller, yeah, man.
Yes, definitely.
Absolutely.
You have a wonderful day.